For the next 30 minutes, welcome to Old Testament Prophets with your host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In a moment, Father Pacwa.
Shalom Aleichem. The peace of God be with you all. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. And we're about to end the first third of our series on the prophets. Those prophets we're dealing with in the first section here have been those prophets who never wrote their own book, but instead influenced Israel's history, especially, as we've seen in the last weeks, influenced the kingship in Israel. Well, now we're going to finish up with Elisha. Now, Elisha was a successor of the prophet Elijah. And to understand what we're going to talk about today, let's go back to Elijah. Take a look in your Bibles at the first book of Kings, chapter 19. And what we see here is that Elijah was alone, depressed, and chased by Queen Jezebel, who wanted to kill him. And he runs south through Beersheba, all the way down to Mount Horeb, that is Mount Sinai. Horeb is the northern dialect word for Mount Sinai, the southern dialect word. And while he's there, he sees the Lord and hears the Lord speak. Not in storm or earthquake or fire, but in a still, small voice. And the Lord gives Elijah three tasks. First, anoint Elisha, the son of Shaphat, to be a prophet. Second, anoint Hazael to be the king of Aram. And thirdly, anoint Jehu to be the king of Israel. Well, he does the first of these tasks. And Elijah goes immediately and sees Elisha plowing his field, takes off his own cloak and throws it over Elisha's head and makes him a prophet. But we don't see him do the rest because he didn't do the other two anointings. That's where Elisha comes in. Elisha goes on to complete the work of Elijah. So now open up your Bibles to the second book of Kings, chapter 8. We see here in chapter 8, that Elisha has gone over to Damascus. This is in chapter 8, verse 7. And Ben-Hadad was the king of Aram, that is, of Damascus. The country is called Aram, because the people are Arameans. Okay. And we don't know why Elisha had gone there. Perhaps he had gone there to run away from the king of Israel, perhaps from Jezebel. Or perhaps the king Ben-Hadad had invited him. We don't know. But the king of Aram was ill, and we see that somebody says, the man of God has come to you. And the king said to Hazael, now Hazael was one of the servants of the king of Aram, the king of Damascus. And the king said to Hazael, take a present with you and go and meet the man of God. Consult Yahweh. And the word consult, darash in Hebrew, means to seek Yahweh, seek His will, as to whether or not I shall live and recover from my illness. So Hazael, the servant of the king, went to meet Elisha, and he took as a present the best that Damascus could offer, a load of 40 camels. Now, Damascus was a wonderful town, a magical town, so much so that many centuries later, Muhammad said that this place, Damascus, is like paradise. It's like being in paradise. Because it was an oasis with a lot of fruit growing there. And perhaps much of this fruit was given as a present. And perhaps also many of the different goods would be like going over into Saks Fifth Avenue and all kinds of things being brought to you, 40 camels loads. And so Hazael went to Elisha with all these things, and says the king's message, am I going to recover or not? And Elisha said, go and say. Well, here we become confused, because in Hebrew we have a word, lo. Lo sounds the same in two different spellings. One spelling means no. The other spelling means to him. And in the Bible we have a difficulty because in the text itself it says, go and tell him, that is, go and tell, or go and say, you will not survive, you will not live. But the rabbis were confused themselves. They had another tradition, another text that said, go and say to him, you will recover. So we don't know exactly what's meant here. There are two traditions that the rabbis are going upon, and they were confused themselves. But whatever the case is, go and say he will recover, but he will certainly die. And so Hazael then asks a question that is a servant of the king of Aram. Why does my lord weep? And then Elisha said, because I know all the harm that you will do to the Israelites. How you, Hazael, will burn down their fortresses, put their picked warriors to the sword, dash their little children to pieces, and rip open their pregnant women. And Hazael said, but what is your servant? How can this dog do anything so great? In other words, Hazael says, I'm like a little dog. I can't do anything. Who am I? I'm nobody. And so, Elisha says, in a vision from Yahweh, I have seen you as the king of Aram. And then Hazael left Elisha, went back to his master, and the king said, well, what did Elisha say? He said, you will certainly recover. But then the next day, he took a blanket or some sort of a cloth, soaked it in water, and spread it over the face of the king, Ben-Hadad. And so Ben-Hadad died, and Hazael succeeded him. And as a matter of fact, we have records from the king of Assyria, King Shalmaneser III. And he says that Hazael, the son of a nobody, became the king of Aram. So we have corroboration of this in Assyrian records. But that doesn't end the career of Elisha. He sells one more person to anoint. So turn over to chapter 9 of 2 Kings. And we see there that in verse 1, Elisha the prophet summoned one of the sons of the prophets and said to him, put on your underwear, gird up your loins, okay? Because that's what you had to do when you went on a journey. And take this flask of oil and go to Ramoth Gilead. That is the heights of Gilead. And when you arrive there, look for Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi. And when you find him, tell him to get up and leave his companions and take him to an inner room. Take the flask of oil then, pour it over his head and say, this is Yahweh's word. I anoint you king of Israel. And then throw open the door and escape as fast as you can. And so, this Elisha does not himself even go ahead to fulfill the word of the Lord to anoint Jehu, the word given to Elijah. He sends one of his servants or one of his associate prophets, one of the sons of the prophets, to do it. Now stay tuned, and we're going to be back in just a minute to see what happened when the son of the prophet met Jehu. Welcome back. We're taking a look at Elisha and the last of the acts of Elisha that we see in the Old Testament. And Elisha has just sent one of his associate prophets, one of the sons of the prophets. Elisha would be like a father to these prophets. And all those associated with him would call him their father, and then they would be his sons, the sons of the prophet. And this one is sent over to anoint Jehu with oil. And he is told simply, I've anointed you king of Israel. That's what he's supposed to say to Jehu, and then run. But now look what happens. In verse 4 and 5, we see, the young man left for Ramoth-Gilead. When he arrived, he found all the officers of the king. And they were sitting together, and he said, I have a message for you, O captain, or commander. And Jehu said, for which of us? And then the young prophet said, for you, captain. So Jehu got up and went out of the house. And the young man poured oil on his head and said, Yahweh, the God of Israel, says this, I have anointed you king over the people of Yahweh, even the king of Israel. You are to strike down the family of Ahab, your master, and I will avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and of all the servants of Yahweh on Jezebel. And the whole family of Ahab, I will wipe out every single man that urinates against the wall that belongs to the family of Ahab, whether they are in fetters or whether they are free. I will make the family of Ahab like the family of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and Baasha, the son of Ahijah. So, and those two families had already been wiped out. The same phrase, as a matter of fact, that they would kill every man who urinates against the wall. And as for Jezebel, the dog shall eat her in the territory of Jezreel. No one will bury her. And with this, he opened the door and ran out. Now, this young prophet has added quite a bit to what was said by Elisha. Elisha had told him, just say, you are to be the king, O Jehu. But now he has all this stuff. And Jehu is going to have to react to that. And we'll see what happens by expanding the word of Elisha. Now Jehu came out to the other officers, and picture Jehu. He's sort of playing it real cool, real suave. Hey, no big deal. It's just the other officers said, is everything okay? And why did this Meshuggah, why did this madman come to you? And Jehu answered, oh, you know these people, these prophets, you know how these men talk. And the officer said, hey, you're hiding something. You're evading. You're not telling the truth. Now tell us the truth. So he said, well, his drift was this. Yahweh says this, he said, I have anointed you the king of Israel. Whereupon they all took off their cloaks and spread them out under him on the stairway. And they sounded the trumpet and they started to shout, Malach Yehu! Malach Yehu! That is, Yehu is king. Jehu is king. So this word of the prophet all of a sudden inspires the other officers to revolt against the king, Joram. And so Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi, plotted against Jehoram. Now, at this time, we see a note here in verse 14 and 15. The king Jehoram, you know, the grandson of Ahab, was out fighting against Hazael. See, this Hazael that Elisha had anointed had already begun to fulfill the word of Elisha and attack Israel and kill its soldiers, just as Elisha had said. And the king himself was wounded against the Arameans. And he was recovering at the town of Jezreel, which was in the Jezreel Valley, a large, very, very fertile valley in the north, okay, northern part of Israel. And so here we have this man Jehu come with his chariots, and picture Jehu coming from the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. And this Jehu is somebody who wants to drive his chariot on. He drives and whips on his horses and whips them on. Drives like a madman. And the lookout saw him, and he saw this troop of Jehu's men approaching. And he shouted, hey, I see a group of men coming. That's what the watchman says. And so they send out a messenger on a horse. And the messenger goes out there, and he says, are you here for peace? Is it peace here for you? And then the Jehu says, what do you care about peace? Get behind me. And so he keeps on riding. Then another messenger is sent out from the king. And the messenger says, are you here for peace? And he said, what do you know about peace? Get behind me. So now these soldiers are joining up with Jehu. And then the king Jehoram comes there. And he was being visited by Ahaziah. Now Ahaziah happens to be not only the king of Judah, but also his brother-in-law. Because Ahab and Jezebel had a daughter named Athaliah. And they gave that daughter to the king of Judah to be his wife. And Athaliah was back in Jerusalem, and her husband, the son-in-law of Ahab and Jezebel, and brother-in-law of the king Jehoram, was up there in Jezreel, visiting when Jehoram was sick, wounded in battle. And so, Jehoram says, come on, Ahaziah, get in your chariot, let's go out there and see what's happening. So they both go out in their chariots. And then, as soon as Jehoram saw Jehu, he said, Jehu, are you here for peace? And he replied, what kind of question is that? When, while all the prostitutions, all the harlotries, and all the sorceries of your mother Jezebel go on. In other words, your mama is a prostitute. And your mama is a witch. And he meant it. At that, Joram wheeled about. He took his chariot and spun it around as quick as he can. Because anybody who's saying that your mama is a whore is not around there to say nice things about you either. So he gets out of there. And Jehu takes out an arrow and shoots it at Jehoram and kills him. And then Ahaziah also runs away. Now, Jehu goes on and pursues the king of Judah, Ahaziah, and eventually kills him. And we're going to see that that leads to all kinds of trouble. And then, after that, Jehu goes into Jezreel, the town, and Jezebel heard of it. We see this in verse 30. She made up her eyes with coal and adorned her head and appeared at the window. Now, to put makeup on your eyes was an idiom in the ancient world for getting ready for sexual intercourse. When a woman was ready for sexual intercourse, she put on eye makeup. And that's what Jezebel does. It's as if she is ready to seduce Jehu. And Jehu goes ahead, sends one of his men into the palace, and as Jezebel's looking out the window to tempt Jehu, one of his men comes and throws her out that very window, and she gets dashed on the ground, and the dogs eat her blood. And that's not enough for Jehu. He then goes ahead, as we see in chapter 10, he massacres all the 70 children of Ahab, and he goes ahead and kills all the worshippers of Baal. He leads a bloody, bloody slaughter against those who did not worship Yahweh. Now, we're going to be back in just a minute, so we ask you to stay with us as we continue to see what happens in Jehu's revolution. Welcome back. We're talking about the revolution that was worked out through Jehu, but was instigated by the activity of Elisha, the prophet, who sent out one of his sons, one of the sons of the prophets, not a physical son, but a spiritual son, to anoint Jehu as king. And after Jehu had killed King Jehoram of Israel and King Ahaziah of Judah, and then Queen Jezebel threw her out the window, then he went over and he went to the city of Samaria, and he killed all the relatives of Ahab he could find. The various sons of Ahab, he killed 70 of them. One at a time, he executed them on the same stone. So that means they would take each one at a time and execute them, cutting off their heads or stabbing them. We don't know what happened. But he would execute them. And then he went to find other relatives and killed them. He also went to the temple of Baal. And he said, let's have a big festival for Baal. All those who worship Baal come over to the festival. All those who are his prophets and priests come to the festival. And so they do. And there was not left one man who did not attend, as we see here in chapter 10, verse 21. And they were all packed into the temple of Baal until it was full from wall to wall. Jehu then said to the keeper of the wardrobe, bring out the vestments for those who are devoted to Baal. And he brought out the vestments. And then Jehu went into the temple of Baal with Jehonadab, the son of Rechab. Now, this Jehonadab, son of Rechab, is a character that we're going to see referred to later on in the prophet Jeremiah. Because the people of Rechab were a clan of Israelites who wanted that old-time religion. Now, in the old-time religion of Israel, there was no drinking of wine because they did not grow any grapes. There was no living in houses because they used to live in tents. There was only living in tents and following flocks just like Moses did, just like Miriam did, just like Aaron did. Because if that religion was good enough for Moses, it's good enough for me. If it was good enough for Aaron to live in a tent, it's good enough for me to live in a tent. So these people were fundamentalists who would not allow any drinking and no house building. If you're going to be a real fundamentalist here, you can't live in a house. And you can't grow any crops. That was against their interpretation of that old-time religion. And they also were very much in favor of Yahweh, strong Yahweh adherents. And they're really committed to Yahweh. And so, Jehu went into the temple of Baal with Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, and said to all these devotees of Baal, "Make quite sure that there are no devotees of Yahweh in here with you, but only those dedicated to Baal." And then he went on with the sacrifice. So make sure there's nobody here who worships Yahweh, just you guys from Baal. And now, Jehu had stationed 80 of his men outside, having said, "If any one of you men, any one of you 80 men outside the temple of Baal, allows any of those I'm handing over to you to escape, your life will be forfeit." So he has a trap. If these 80 of his soldiers let any Baal worshippers escape, the soldiers are to die. And so, when he finished offering this holocaust at the temple of Baal, he gave order to the guards and to the leaders, "Go and kill them, let no one out." So all those people in the temple of Baal were killed. So here we have this mass slaughter. And one of the things that I think we can perhaps relate to in our own history, in modern times, is the revolution brought about by Ayatollah Khomeini. Now that was very much a religious revolution to get back to that old-time religion of Muhammad, to get back to old-time Islam. And many, many, many thousands of people have died, both in war, being told that if they go and fight for this war in Iran, that they will go right to heaven. And others are also being told that if they disobey Islamic law, that they have their hands cut off or be killed. And many, many have been executed. And so that kind of religious fervor and that kind of religious revolution is very much just like the revolution that Jehu did here for Yahweh. Now, because of this, it says here in Kings that Yahweh was pleased with Jehu. Yahweh was pleased because he, as a matter of fact, it says in verse 30, Yahweh said to Jehu, "Since you have done properly what was pleasing in my sight and have achieved all that I set my heart on against Ahab's family, your sons shall sit on the throne of Israel down to the fourth generation." But Jehu did not follow the law of Yahweh, the God of Israel, faithfully and wholeheartedly. He did not get rid of the sins of Jeroboam, that is, the two golden calves at Dan and Bethel. So he wasn't completely satisfactory to Yahweh. And furthermore, Hazael, the king who had been anointed over Damascus by Elisha, the one we talked about earlier, this Hazael kept on attacking and attacking and attacking against this Jehu. And as a matter of fact, it doesn't say this in the Bible, but we know from Assyrian records, there's this large black obelisk, a black stone that stands all about up to here. And if you're ever in Chicago, you get to go to see a copy of it, an authentic copy of it, in the Oriental Institute Museum. And in there, it shows a carving of a picture of Jehu bowing down to Shalmaneser III, the king of the Assyrians, and giving him presents. And the Assyrians say that Jehu gave presents to the king of Assyria so that the Assyrians would attack Damascus, which they did gladly for the presents and also because they liked to attack Damascus and steal stuff. And that got Hazael off of Jehu's back. Now, there's one sort of difficulty with all this story, and this is the story of one of the most violent revolutions in the whole of the Bible. And it seems in the book of Kings that Yahweh was pleased with this. But I would ask you to take a look ahead at another prophet. Take a look at Hosea. If we jump up ahead. Now, Hosea is a prophet during the fourth generation after Jehu, during the time of his great-great-great-grandson. And that was the king Jeroboam. And it says here that in verse 3, "Name you the son, or go and take Gomer, the prostitute wife, and she'll bear a son. and name him Jezreel. Yahweh told him, for it will not be long before I make the house of Jehu pay for the bloodshed at Jezreel, and I put an end to the sovereignty of the house of Israel. When that day comes, I will break Israel's bow in the valley of Jezreel. So it seems here that the Lord's word to Hosea is that, look, sure, Jehu did my will and got rid of Ahab, but perhaps he just went too far. Perhaps his blood vengeance that he took was too much. And ultimately, his family was no better. His family also committed serious sins, and they were oppressive to my people. So that the violence was no way to solve the problem. Just as it's no real problem for us as religious people. Instead, we must seek God, seek his peace, and let him love us as he chooses to love us. God bless you.
Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the costs, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will.